Hi, this is David Self doing the Explore the Bible lesson preview for July 25th, 2021, entitled, What's the Use? The background's Ecclesiastes 1, with the lesson being verses 12 through 15, and then chapter 2, verses 18 through 26. A recurring theme of Ecclesiastes is the futility of finding security or significance in earthly pursuits. They do not come from human efforts, travel and sightseeing, pleasure, human wisdom, hard work, self-centeredness, power, sacrifice, or vows, nor wealth. Security and significance are only found in Christ. And we see that explicitly in chapter 12, verses 13, in his conclusion about significance in God. I have a handout I'm going to use for my class. Some of you who are Lord of the Ring fans might enjoy having it as well. If you do, just email me and I'll send it to you as an attachment. Now, this is taught on July 25th, and I'm normally not in the office and couldn't send it on July 23rd. So anytime the 22nd or before, you want the Gandalf Who said this, Gandalf or Ecclesiastes? It's kind of a fun icebreaker for that lesson. In verses 1 through 11, we have a seemingly endless circle of life. It begins with the words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Absolute futility, says the teacher. Absolute futility, everything is futile. What does a man gain for all of his efforts that he labors at under the sun? A generation goes, a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. So the author is introduced as the son of David. It's generally accepted to be Solomon due to the description and the later references to wisdom in chapter 1:16 and wealth in chapter 2, verse 8. Holman Christian Study Bible said the Hebrew word here translated as teacher probably means assembly leader. It's not the ordinary word for teacher. It's a rare Hebrew word found 7 times in Ecclesiastes, nowhere else in the Bible. And it could mean public speaker. It is the author's self-designation throughout the book. For this reason, the book of Ecclesiastes is often called by that Hebrew word. The words son of David, king in Jerusalem, could refer to any Davidic king of Judah, but only Solomon was king over Israel from Jerusalem, over all Israel from Jerusalem. The temporal nature is a recurring theme in chapters 1 and 2, and this idea of absolute futility. Holman Christian Study Bible said, Hevel, the Hebrew word for futile, basically means vapor or breath, but it comes to mean vain, transitory, or futile. It does not necessarily mean that something is altogether worthless, but it implies that something is at best only of fleeting value. In the context of Ecclesiastes, it means that things done under the sun are only of temporary significance, and therefore set against eternity, they have no real value. Next week in the lesson, it's going to be vanity, vanity, all is vanity. I remember Jimmy Draper describing that as cotton candy. He said, have you ever eaten cotton candy? And then he said, are you sure? It's fleeting. It's temporal. It has no lasting value. Contrast that against the early Christians, who many were martyred, realized that this life on this earth is temporary. And so in the 2nd century AD, Christians in North Africa responded to the Roman Empire's persecution in a unique way. They considered martyrdom as an honorable way for a Christian to complete his or her commitment to Christ. To emphasize this conviction, they coined a new greeting for one another, quote, may you gain your crown. It's become both a common greeting and a constant reminder of Christ-like commitment. Ultimately, for the Christian, there is no significance, there is no security apart from Jesus Christ. Then a troubling purpose. What does a man gain for all of his efforts? The word gain is a business term for profit, and it's used in the book 10 times. Under the sun is used 29 times in Ecclesiastes and refers to things that happen on this earth. What does a man gain for all his efforts? I In chapter two, he kind of concludes on that theme with, you know, you work all your life and you leave it to someone else. What do you really gain? It's interesting. In 2006, Bill Gates was named by Forbes as the richest person on earth. And his quotation was, "I wish I wasn't the world's richest man. There's nothing good that comes out of that." Well, I had to check and see what Forbes came up with this year. And because of the value of companies and stock changes, I mean, it literally changes day by day. But Bill Gates did get his list in the May 2021 issue. He was listed as only the fourth richest man in the world. Number three was Elon Musk. Number two, Jeff Bezos of Amazon fame. And the number one richest man in the world was a Frenchman that I had really not heard of, Bernard Arnault, who owns a big conglomerate that includes Christian Dior, Louis Vuitton, Dom Perignon, etc., etc. A lot of French companies involved in that conglomerate. But depending on the stock prices, that kind of changes from day to day. So what does a man gain for all of his efforts? I remember Bunker Hunt during the collapse of the silver price in Dallas said something along the lines of a billion here, a billion there, and pretty soon you're talking about serious money. Troubling purpose, and then a tenuous future. He said there's nothing new under the sun. Holman Christian Study Bible said when Ecclesiastes said there's nothing new under the sun, it means that there is nothing that changes the fundamental facts of the human condition. This does not deny that there are technological innovations or new works of art, literature, and architecture, but these things are all variations on what has already existed. They do not deliver humanity from its bondage of death. The new thing that really changes lives can only come from God. And then finally, this theme of this transitory existence. There will be no remembrance by those who follow them. The point here is not that people will all be forgotten. Solomon commissioned entire books to record history. The truth is that there is no lasting significance to our human achievements. Now, that's a pretty powerful sentence. There's no lasting a significance to our human achievements. Someone said, "Only one life, 'twill soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last." So human achievements versus Christ or kingdom endeavors. That's the bilateral choice we have to make. What am I going to spend my efforts on? What am I going to spend my life on? It's a stewardship issue. Then there's a limited perspective. He said, "I, the teacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem. I applied my mind to seek and explore through wisdom all that was done under heaven. God has given people this miserable task to keep them occupied. I've seen all the things that are done under the sun and have found everything to be futile. A pursuit of the wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened, and what is lacking cannot be counted." Holman Christian Study Bible said these verses describe the futility of the quest for knowledge. The claim is not that intellectual pursuits are evil. They are often vain and frustrating because no person, by learning, finds the answers to his fundamental questions. Notice the authority. He said, "I've been king." Holman Christian Study Bible said, "A king does not stop serving as a king until he dies." The phrase "have been king" does not mean that the teacher had stopped being king. Rather, the point is that he had in his lifetime been in a position to have the wealth and freedom to carry out the investigations described in this book. Then he said, "It's aimless, this miserable task." Holman Christian Study Bible said, "The quest for wisdom is usually thought of as a noble and fulfilling, but it's here called this miserable task, meaning that it's just a hard job." And so you all have heard about my retirement announcement. That'll go into effect the end of this calendar year. But Stephen Trammell and I are actually going to trade offices toward the end of September. So I have this daunting task of cleaning out my library. If you've ever been in my office, I have row upon row of books accumulated over the years. Some of those were passed down to me from my father, who collected them from other preachers' libraries. And so my wife, Bonnie, basically said, we don't have room for all those at the house. You need to do something with them. So I've appealed to my sons. Do you want to take any mementos out of my library? I'll eventually have to go to the other ministers on the staff, the church library, various people who want a particular volume or set of volumes or whatever. But it is a miserable task, not just collecting wisdom, but at the end of the day, getting rid of it and distributing it. So I can certainly relate to Solomon. He said in chapter 12, verse 12, of the making of many books, there is no end. And I could say of the distribution of many books, there is no end. So this miserable task. And then he's abashed. He said, what is crooked cannot be straightened. Holman Christian Study Bible said this verse is a proverb. What is crooked cannot be straightened refers to a problem that cannot be solved. What is lacking cannot be counted refers to working with insufficient information. The problem of understanding life is beyond mere human humans. It's beyond our comprehension. And so there's the emptiness of knowledge for its own sake in verses 16 through 18. For with much wisdom is much sorrow. As knowledge increases, grief increases. So instead of answering all of our questions, the quest to understand simply leads to more questions and uncertainty. We're seeing this in our culture with the arrogance of knowledge replacing intimacy with God. Paul describes the culture in the last days in 2 Timothy as always learning, but never able to come to a knowledge of the truth. An example of that, in 2005, 2006, Dan Brown came out with a book called The Da Vinci Code, and he tried to put a lot of things into context, and it caused quite a stir, if you remember, because it was basically seeking to undermine Christianity and to undercut Christianity. One person pointed out, if you're going to accept the conclusion of Da Vinci Code, you need to understand that it's based on a pile of erroneous facts. Several things within the book. According to the architect I.M. Pei, the large pyramid at the Louvre contains 687 panes of glass, not, as Brown counts in the book, 666. Number two, the Dead Sea Scrolls were written more than a century before Christ, so they obviously have nothing to do with early Christianity, as he says in the book. Number three, Brown's theory about Da Vinci's Mona Lisa and the Last Supper are not supported by a single known art historian. Number four, jumping out of a bathroom window at the Louvre makes for an exciting escape scene in the book and the movie, but it's impossible because the restrooms don't have windows. So if you can go to basic facts within the book and realize that they've been altered to fit a narrative, how many of the meatier issues in the book are really true? That becomes a metaphor for a lot of the sociological theories and the things that you're seeing, those secular wisdom, that secular knowledge, those secular theories oftentimes are built on a house of cards. Then the emptiness of pleasure and possessions. He goes into great detail in verses 1 through 11. Reading in verses 1 through 3, I said to myself, go ahead, I'll test you with pleasure. Enjoy what is good, but it turns out to be futile. I said about laughter, it's madness. And about pleasure, what does this accomplish? I explored with my mind how to let my body enjoy life with wine and how to grasp folly. My mind still guided me with wisdom until I could see what is good for people to do under heaven during the few days of their lives. Now, understand that advertising tends to glorify the body and the senses. If you buy this, you'll look or smell or feel better. Solomon points out the lie by indulging himself in pleasure, yet his conclusion was everything is futile. I remember Robert Browning Hamilton's poem, I walked a mile with pleasure, she chatted all the way, but left me none the wiser for all she had to say. I walked a mile with sorrow, and ne'er a word said she. But oh, the things I learned from her when sorrow walked with me. So he said pleasure was not the end-all be-all that people want to put it out to. Solomon's wealth allowed him to sample anything and everything. His wish list included, but was not limited to, laughter, verse 1, pleasure, verse 1, wine, verse 3, achievements, verse 4, houses, vineyards, gardens, parks, water, verses 4 through 6, male and female servants, verse 7, more than all those who were before me in Jerusalem, verse 7, silver and gold for myself and the treasures of kings, verse 8, male and female singers, and many concubines, the delights of men, verse 8. So in great detail, Solomon describes the futility of gaining satisfaction through the pursuit of pleasure. Holman Christian Study Bible said, Solomon's assertion that my wisdom also remained with me is important. If he had lost all self-control and had become an addict, then the fact that his wealth and luxury had not made him happy would be self-evident. But he did handle the prosperity well. He did not fall into debauchery. It's not only excess and dissipation that leads to ruin, but even indulgence with moderation does not satisfy. So Solomon said, look, let me save you the time. I've gone down that road. It doesn't lead where you want to go. So it leads to doubt, verses 12 through 17. Notice the disappointment. Then I turn to consider wisdom, verse 12. Chapter 1, Holman Christian Study Bible said, the quest for knowledge is a source of frustration and pain because it's futile. No human mind can solve the mysteries of life. Wisdom has some practical value, but it's subject to great limitations. The advantages it offers are temporary. I had a friend that he went to a Christian university to major in Christianity and religion, but a philosophy professor asked him, you know, to consider majoring in philosophy. So he did that for a year. And basically, he never went down deeper, stayed down longer, came up drier than just studying philosophy for an entire year. It was a disappointment. He almost turned from the faith because of it. He is now, I must say, a retired missionary and very, very active in the faith, so it all turned out well. Notice the defeat. How is it that a wise man dies just like the fool? Despite all of his wealth and wisdom, the preachers would, in the end, die just like the common fool. Michelangelo said, the greater danger for most of us lies not in setting our aim too high and falling short, but in setting our aim too low and achieving our mark. Defeat. Despair. Therefore, I hated life. We've talked about those killer D's. And despair is just one step before depression. In chapter 2, he concludes in 18 through 21, therefore, I hated all my work that I labored at under the sun, because I must leave it for the man who comes after me. And who knows whether he'll be a wise man or a fool, yet he will take over all the work that I labored at skillfully under the sun. This too is futile. So I began to give myself over to despair concerning all my work that I had labored at under the sun. When there is a man whose work was done with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and he must give his portion to a man who has not worked for it, then this too is futile and is a great wrong. Holman Christian Study Bible said, in this section, Ecclesiastes returns to the subject of wealth and pleasure. But unlike verses 1 through 11, which focus on the impossibility of finding satisfaction in riches, this text focuses on the absurdity of devoting one's life to acquiring wealth only to leave it all behind to someone else. A person may toil ceaselessly for wealth so that his days are filled with grief, but he must lose it all to someone who had none of his skill and who did not work for it. It's a little history lesson is probably apropos at this point. When Solomon died, he left his kingdom to his son Rehoboam. And Rehoboam, unfortunately, had two sets of advisors. He had older advisors who said, you know, you need to back off on the taxation. You need to govern with a light hand, with moderation. The younger advisors, on the other hand, said, your father ruled with whips. You need to rule with scorpions. In other words, you need to make things harder on the people. And as a result, Rehoboam lost the northern 10 tribes. The kingdom split into the northern kingdom, Israel, the southern kingdom, much smaller, Judea, and and Jerusalem, that's all that Rehoboam had left, and the kingdom was never united again. So this idea of the inheritance being blown, Solomon, probably took the United Kingdom to its highest point during his reign, wealth, wisdom, territorial expansion, all of those things. But he left it to a son who was unqualified to rule, and the kingdom split and was never the same again. So he concludes in verses 23:2-26, to enjoy work, for what does a man get with all of his work and all of his efforts that he labors at under the sun? For all his days are filled with grief, and his occupation is sorrowful. Even at night his mind does not rest. This too is futile. There is nothing better for man than to eat and drink and enjoy his work. I have seen this, even this is from God's hand, because who can eat and who can enjoy life apart from him? For to the man who is pleasing in his sight, he gives wisdom, knowledge, and joy. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and accumulating in order to give to the one who is pleasing in God's sight. This too is futile and a pursuit of the wind. Holman Christian Study Bible says, the words, there's nothing better for a man than to eat, drink, and enjoy his work, must be understood in context. Ecclesiastes is preoccupied with how death nullifies all of man's accomplishments. It emphasizes that our days under the sun are limited, and thus it is a tragedy to waste those days with excessive labor and grief. There are obviously many more things to a good life than just eating, drinking, and enjoying one's work, and Ecclesiastes does not suggest that we abandon ourselves to pleasure, pleasure-seeking or to our careers. But we ought to recognize that life is short and not miss out on the basic pleasures. These two are a gift from God. I remember talking to my dad when I was a young youth minister and a limited salary, two young kids at home, wife to support. And I think he was the associate pastor at the church and I was the student minister. And, you know, it's tough when you're on a limited salary, but you're surrounded by people that are wealthy, as was the case at our church. There weren't a great number of them, but I was very aware of people that owned private planes and drove expensive cars and just got to do things I didn't get to do on a youth minister's salary. And I, in frustration, went to my dad one day, and he pointed me to this passage, and he said, "Son," he said, "you can only eat one meal at a time. You can only occupy one room at a time. You can only drive one car at a time." He said, "past those simple pleasures of eating and drinking and enjoying your work," he said, "everything else is just a multiplication of that, which you can't utilize at any given time." In 1999, only 8 babies in America were given the name Nevaeh. Since that time, it's gained popularity faster than any other name, and this was at least up till about 2010. Since the government started keeping track of names a century ago, 2005, it was the 70th most popular name for newborn girls, moving ahead of Sarah, Vanessa, Amanda. Uniquely, Nevaeh is not a biblical name, nor does it stem from any religious writings. It's not a foreign name. It's not from any real or fabricated celebrity. Nevaeh is simply heaven spelled backwards. Although this name is popular among evangelical Christians, it seems rather symbolic of American culture, so says the author. From a theological perspective, we often get things backwards and then glamorize the novelty. For instance, family values, tolerance, abortion, entertainment. Backward theology may seem clever, but often it leads to the opposite direction of life. If you take Ecclesiastes on its face, you get backwards theology. It's all about the temporal existence. It's about the futility of existence. It's about the end of things at death. But we know from a Christian's perspective, we've got the entire story. And we know that there is significance, there is security in Jesus Christ, and there is a purpose for working on this earth that has eternal significance. Our application, number one, temporal things will not produce eternal benefit. Secondly, our search for significance must be rooted on God. And then thirdly, to be truly happy, we must focus on the Creator rather than on His creation. In the Leaders Pack, item three is a map, Solomon's building projects. Item four is a poster, Worthwhile Pursuits. Item eight is a handout, Ecclesiastes timeline. Item 11 is a handout, Vanity and Under the Sun in Ecclesiastes. I appreciate you tuning in. We are trying desperately to archive all of the lesson previews on our church website, so we'll have those from now on. Be praying with us that we can get that in a way that you can access those easily, and they can be very, very beneficial to you. I appreciate your prayers and support, and I will be talking to you next week. Bye-bye.